This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The novel coronavirus is a harsh teacher. High risks predicted by experts can become real, damaging our lives in ways we never thought possible. We are taught that in blood, with hundreds of thousands of lives lost. Despite decades of warnings, reports, and even exercises predicting exactly what happened with this virus, we were caught off guard and unprepared. During this pandemic, the nuclear industry is another disaster, not just waiting to happen, but already dancing with it. Some reactors have been shut down due to the pandemic, but most atomic companies demand to stay open. They call themselves essential services, despite a glut of electricity priced well below what the nuclear industry can match. In many countries, taxpayers are paying billions for malinvestments in nuclear power. They pay even after the plants are shut down. In America, the private operators and their investors demand the federal government top up user bills in order to compete with electricity from cheap wind and natural gas, and that was before the pandemic. They want safety regulations slashed back, inspections and rules developed after major nuclear accidents to be relaxed now. In America, the Trump administration is ready to help. Three of the five commissioners of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission were nominated by President Trump. Along with other environmental protection rules, the Trump administration has been dropping safety requirements at nuclear plants. Now, with the pandemic, it is a free-for-all for the nuclear operators as they struggle to avoid painful bankruptcies across the nation. In just one small example, the former on-site nuclear plant inspectors, found in all nuclear plants by law, are now making their inspections over the phone. There is fear of massive absenteeism of nuclear employees as the pandemic infects workers and their families and contacts. In Georgia, 120 nuclear plant workers had to quarantine. American companies admit they have plans to keep emergency staff, thousands of them, at the reactors in a 24/7 lockdown, sleeping on cots, eating prepared meals. But they won't say if that is already happening or where. During this pandemic, a nuclear reactor in the United States is sunk down in the ground and flooded in Michigan already. You probably did not hear about that. We will ask big questions about nuclear safety during the pandemic with our guest, Grant Smith, Senior Energy Policy Advisor with EWG, the Environmental Working Group. But it is not just America. The international scene is just as crazy. Many companies said they had pandemic plans, but few really did, and certainly no plan on this scale. A few reactors in the UK and France were closed down because they could not be operated safely during a pandemic. Almost all the rest stay on, at full power, despite workers getting infected and essential supply chains in doubt. The Russian state atomic company, Rosatom, brags nuclear is not afraid of COVID-19. Construction on the first nuclear power plant in impoverished Bangladesh is continuing, they say, even though a few hundred Russian nuclear construction experts were called home during the pandemic. I guess it is up to the Bangladeshis to build it completely safely. Rosatom reports construction of new reactors in Egypt and Turkey continues through the pandemic. Russian nuclear operators have been infected with this virus that has been reported. Probably every country with a reactor or nuclear weapon has these infections and risks, and they're not talking about it. What could go wrong? I will summarize carefully worded reports that explain so much. A nuclear accident during a pandemic would be a dire twist in history. Maybe with a bit of sunlight and public voice, can we avoid that? The industry reports terrorists threaten to attack nuclear facilities extra during this plague. Experts point to spikes in attempts to hack nuclear control systems, even while some reactor employees work from home computers. I hope they're not using Windows 10 with those botched and hackable updates. In all countries, from Finland to Canada to Australia, the problems are policies meant to cope with nuclear-sized risks during this pandemic are shrouded in secrecy. A watchdog group reports major decisions approved by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission require, by law, public consultation and information, But the pandemic has excused all that. The brakes are off. The deregulators are not regulating. The NRC claims it rules the operations of nuclear plants, but not worker health. That's not their problem. The NRC has not provided a public plan for nuclear plants during COVID-19. Other national governments are distracted. They're already politically and financially enmeshed in this nuclear game. They're invested. And that leaves safety up to the nuclear plant owners and investors themselves, the unseen wealthy and their CEOs, the ones already facing oblivion as dangerous aging reactors shut down one after another and wind power blows them away. You are already overloaded with bad news from this pandemic. Why should you bother with a secret, dangerous situation in the nuclear industry before it blows up? From the Chernobyl and Fukushima nuclear disasters, we learned this painful lesson. A reactor blowing up anywhere is a reactor blowing up everywhere. You do need to know what is going on in these shadows. Sure, I will mention extreme rainfall events flooding out toxic chemical plants and millions of people on the Bay of Bengal. There is science news about more hurricanes this season during the pandemic. Siberia is unbelievably, wildly hot. Weather has been destabilized in many parts of the world. As I reported weeks ago, COVID-19 is raging out of control in Brazil. Russia has shot up to number two. And America, what can we say? The first wave is not over. The second wave is expected to arrive in June, and especially in the southern denial states. Will there be a horrible third resurgence in the northern hemisphere this fall? Some of us may be gone by then. This is the time to look where we most don't want to see. The danger making this world more radioactive or blowing up cities and civilization, that danger has been extreme for so long. Most people do not want to hear about it. I know that. Downloads of this show from our website will be lower than usual. But someday, our lives will not be limited by this virus, and someday, children will no longer need nuclear fear. We can only get past these times by surviving them, and then doing better. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. Before I cover the convergence of a pandemic, climate change, and grave nuclear risks in many countries, let's start out with our guest in America.
Radio EcoShock.
American nuclear plant workers are being overworked, some crowded in conditions ripe for the spread of coronavirus. By late April, multiple reactors reported employees infected with COVID-19. The Trump version of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission reacted to the crisis by dropping key safety rules and inspections. Grant Smith is Senior Energy Policy Advisor for EWG, the Environmental Working Group, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Grant Smith, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me.
What got you and Editor-in-Chief Bill Walker looking into nuclear plant operation during this pandemic?
We observe articles every day. We work through energy issues. We try to keep abreast on all the topics and what's happening in the industry, and this was critically important. We've addressed nuclear power in blogs before, you know, the excessive costs, the state bailouts in the United States. You know, five or six states have bailed out the nuclear plants and deregulated states to the tune of like $15 billion. You know, there's been bailouts in the past, $110 billion or so in the mid-90s when we deregulated and they couldn't compete then. And there's been serious safety concerns ongoing. I mean, this isn't the first one. AP did a series of articles in 2011 describing essentially collusion between NRC regulators, Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulators here, and the industry. And the agency parlance for weakening safety standards was called sharpening the pencil. I mean, that's what the reporters were told in this series of articles. And we're seeing the same modus operandi here with the agency, basically looking the other way, allowing these plants to run, essentially putting the profits and the nuclear technology first before public safety. So this was a huge red flag to us, and to many others following this issue. And we always seem to be running on the edge of imminent disaster with these plants in terms of weak safety standards. In the United States, you know, plants are now asking for another 20-year extension of their life cycle, you know, up to 80 years. No other country's doing that. We'll have the oldest fleet on the planet, and there are certain components, critical components, that you can't replace that could cause a serious accident or meltdown. And now, on top of all this, we are continually being shown the vulnerability of these plants from climate change, right? I mean, here when in the U.S., when utilities file with the Securities Exchange Commission, you know, that's called a 10-K form, and they describe the risks that they face. And typically, they'll say, well, there's these severe storms, drought, that could impact the operation of our plants. And they're talking about these large thermoelectric plants that are water-cooled, like nuclear plants. And, you know, we've already had examples, I'm sure, where hurricanes on the East Coast, where nuclear plants had to be shut down prior to the storm in hopes that, you know, they won't be damaged severely. Flooding, it takes a week or more to get the things back up and running. They're extremely vulnerable. They're not very resilient in terms of withstanding these types of climate changes. And now, you know, an additional climate risk is the pandemic. You know, the World Health Organization says, hey, these are going to increase, climate change is causing this. And now we have the example of how difficult it is to keep these plants running in the context of the COVID-19 outbreak. So I think this should be an added financial risk for Wall Street to say, to put pressure on these people, and it should be for the federal government as well. You have to add this and you have to incorporate it into planning. I think the ultimate conclusion is you either don't run these plants or you run them unsafely with infusions of huge subsidies now and again because they're unable to compete with renewables, for instance, with natural gas, which renewables are also competitive with now. And they're just a cumbersome technology. They're not suited well for the coming transition to renewables. They're extremely expensive. They're dangerous to run. And we should start a systematic, rational process to begin phasing them out.
All right. So with the pandemic, if you had to pick just one American reactor with some big concerns, what comes to mind?
Well, you have the Limerick plant in Pennsylvania, Exelon's plant. This is a really egregious example of how the attitude of the industry, the local officials there basically told them, hey, you know, we don't think your safety precautions are adequate to do refueling. We want you to postpone it. They said no. They went ahead. They didn't implement any safety measures until the workers started talking to the press and saying, hey, we're pretty much terrified to work here. People are working on top of one another. There's no safety measures to speak of. They had a pretty significant outbreak initially, you know, like 36 people, and it's unknown now how many more. So that's a very bad example. At Fermi 2 up in Detroit, outside of Detroit, they've had over 140 cases. And yet the local DTE, the local utility there, keeps saying, hey, we're taking all these precautions. So it's extremely difficult. You know, you have like 1,500 people that come in working on top of one another practically. And they go from plant to plant. They're itinerant. So they could be spreading this all over the country as well. And since, you know, not a good percentage of people don't even exhibit symptoms, you know, that it could be, you know, just allowing this to go forward could have significant impact on numbers of cases and deaths going forward, considering how many people are involved in refueling these plants, you know, changing out about a third of the fuel every 18 to 24 months.
And that's not just one or two plants. They've got dozens and dozens of them, and they still plan to go ahead and refuel them right during the pandemic.
Yes, they do. There's like 30, a little over 30 this spring, another two dozen in the fall. And the NRC is essentially allowing these guys to work excessive hours, you know, 86 hours a week. The NRC is well aware that in these refueling operations, if there's, you know, equipment failures or problems, it's, you know, a lot of it's due to fatigue. So they already know this, yet they're allowing this to continue. And what they should do, obviously, is ramp them down And instead of refueling first, it should be safety inspections first to make sure that they're, when they ramp them back up, they are going to run. And in a lot of regions of the country, particularly out east, they have enormous reserve margins for power, way more than they need. So it's questionable whether these plants are even needed for reliability purposes now, considering, you know, electric demand has dropped, you know, 15% or in that range on average. So, you know, there's all those issues, and this has to do with money and protecting the industry. I mean, nuclear power always gets a pass for some reason, although it's a huge albatross around our net, around our wallets, basically any ratepayer and taxpayer wallet. It's just a huge burden. And with age, they become more and more dangerous to run. And the chances of severe accident increase significantly. In fact, David Lockmalm, who did work for the Concerned Scientists, refers to it, you know, says, you know, this is akin to playing Russian roulette if we allow these plants to run another 20 years.
Yeah, I spoke with David Lockbaum after the Fukushima crisis in Japan, the big accident there. And from the Union of Concerned Scientists, he was one of the voices that I felt we could trust. And you wrote in your article at EWG.org that essential federally mandated inspections of nuclear plants, some of them are now being done from home. Really?
Right. Well, yeah, they basically sent a lot of the inspectors away, and they're relying on company reporting, you know, the plant reporting on itself. So, you know, given the attitude of the industry, the constant spin of the industry about this technology that's far from reality, you know, it's a dangerous proposition.
And tell us about the inspection of steam generator tubes at reactors in Florida and Texas. Why does that matter? Is it dangerous?
These things are critical to cooling the plant. And they need to be, you know, frequently inspected because they're exposed to radiation, extreme heat, vibration. They can fail. And if you have a cascading event, you could have a severe radioactive release or worse. You know, this happened at Indian Point Nuclear Plant in the past where they said, well, we're going to postpone this inspection. And they had one of these tubes failed. Luckily, it wasn't a cascading failure. It does release some radioactivity in the air, you know. But again, I mean, to defer something like that to me is completely insane. Why would you do that? I mean, why, you know, another major accident and, you know, the industry's basically a dead duck, right? I mean, who's at some point people aren't going to tolerate this anymore.
You would think, although people keep on doing it. Japan wants to reopen some of their reactors after their horrible experience. Grant, some meatpacking plants did not test their employees for COVID-19, and then they did not report cases to local authorities. They're still not reporting some of them. How is testing going in American nuclear plants, and are the results published?
They are not, as far as I can tell. Still haven't found anything at the NRC, and basically it's reporters digging in. Or, you know, probably being some whistleblowers at the plant, letting them know. It's very difficult to tell what testing is going on. Of course, a number of utility companies say they're testing, you know, every day and ensuring that their workers are healthy, but you just don't know. Basically, the industry is running itself at this point.
Another watchdog group, the Nuclear Resource Information Service, has warned the NRC is not holding required public meetings and community consultations. Instead, citing the virus, the regulator and the operators are making critical decisions on their own, now in secret. Does that worry you?
Oh, yeah. Anytime you're dealing with a situation like this where, you know, an accident is just a severe accident, it's just a total catastrophe, there should be complete transparency. You have to put in place protocols for dealing with this. I mean, if it appears from reading between the lines that this they're asking for extension in hours because they know people are going to be sick, right? So that they might have fewer workers available, so they're going to have to do that. And to the extent you get to a certain level of workforce or under a certain level of workforce, they should basically power the plant down. In fact, you know, they should keep them powered down now, the ones that are under refueling, until this thing passes. Again, you know, emphasizing that many regions of the country, there's plenty of reserve margin where these plants, or many of them, might not be needed at all right now.
Well, we all know American reactors are really old. I mean, America led the movement into nuclear power. Most of these plants were built in the 1960s and 70s, and then it became obvious it just wasn't cost-worthy to build anymore. They couldn't find investors. So most of these plants are running well beyond their original design life, as you pointed out, and that means they need specialized replacement parts that aren't available off the shelf anywhere, and they need them all the time. But can we count on that supply chain when the pandemic has closed down so much business and industry all over the world?
Well, I don't think anybody's relying on their supply chain at this point. You know, the wind sector has the issues with supply chain. You know, the solar sector. Look at our supply chain with respect to personal protective equipment here anyway. It's awful. So I think across the board you have supply chain issues, and there's no reason to believe that they're not having them as well. I mean, since it's pretty much economy-wide at this point.
And it takes a lot of specially trained people to keep an aging reactor running without accidents. And what have you heard about worker absenteeism in the nuclear industry? Anything?
That's not being projected either, really, you know, reported on to any great extent. So to the extent that these issues keep popping up, you know, people getting infected at the nuclear plants during refueling, you would think that there would be more significant problems. Now, at the one plant that had a lot of outbreak is the Vogtle plant down in Georgia. It's they're building two new reactors, and they've had to reduce their workforce because of the infection rate and slow construction. They're still trying to construct it, of course. So they've had to slow their construction rate. That's going to add tens of millions of dollars or more on top of the billions. Like, it's costing over twice as much as they initially predicted now anyway. And this is just going to increase the cost and slow the construction again. So that issue is critical, because not so much in that context, in the context of running the plant, you need a certain amount of people there to make sure that you're not going to have a huge issue.
Well, Georgia was leading America in trying to get the country open. Even Trump was doubtful they were doing it too soon. And so this is the plant where Vogtle is being built. And you say, well, okay, that's not going to cause a nuclear accident because it hasn't even been fueled and opened. But we have to remember that when a lot of these former nuclear plants were built, there were cases of crime involved. There were cases of bad welds. There were inspections that were never done. And so whatever happens now in Georgia could show up 10 or 20 years from now as an accident, and the pandemic will be related to that.
Considering they're really under a lot of pressure to get this thing finished, you could have a lot of problems with the quality of the workmanship, not so much because of the workers, but because they're being pressed to get things done quickly.
With fewer people.
Right.
And fewer inspections. So, look, as you mentioned, even before the pandemic, well before the pandemic, this industry was facing serious financial problems. Now, the owners and investors of these plants have a juicy opportunity, maybe, to get federal bailouts from the trillions wielded by the Trump administration for Corona. Have they cashed in already? Do we know?
I'm not sure. I know the Trump administration's been attempting to bail them out, along with coal plants, through various means. State governments have, you know, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Connecticut, to the tune of billions of dollars. There's no question that they'll be pressing for that, whether it's justified or not. I mean, the utilities are still pretty healthy overall, and to bail out these plants, particularly when you're basically in a recession or worse, you'll see bills skyrocketing, and that's going to create problems, you know, for people affording their electric bills. So this is going to be a huge issue going forward because of the numerous attempts to bail these things out. And in many cases, they're not even needed. It's probably more to do with local tax base and jobs and that type of thing, and not wrecking local economies and actual need for the plants, but they can be replaced. For instance, in Colorado, if a utility company is going to close a coal plant and they're going to replace it with some resource that they're looking at, they basically say, well, now we want you to look at renewables first, energy efficiency, energy storage, and we want to see how much of that investment can get into this local area to help, soften the loss of tax base and jobs. And so there are ways to address these things that don't allow local economies to collapse, that allow for job creation to replace them, and allow for the local economy to continue to thrive, but with other resources that are much more benign.
The business press is reporting that the nuclear industry claims they're under a sustained cyber attack during the pandemic. It's really gone up, and some of their computer systems use decades-old technology that thankfully cannot be accessed from the internet, so I suppose that's a safety feature. But what happens when hundreds or thousands of other workers are asked to work from home computers?
Well, in terms of the control room, they can't send those people home. They have to be there because of what you said. They're not connected to the internet. Again, the issue is, are they going to have enough people in the control room to maintain the plant in a safe, running in a safe manner? So I think the big issue is enough on-site staff at this point to ensure that it will run. And that's one of the big advantages of renewables, for instance. You don't need 1,000 people at a wind farm. You can run them essentially remotely with solar farms, rooftop solar. It just runs. You're not maintaining it. You don't have anybody operating it. When we move to renewables, we're looking at a more resilient system from that standpoint. Again, and with these large power plants, central station power plants, as expensive as they are and polluting, we can move towards moving the source of power near where the power is needed. For instance, in California, because of the fire season now being practically all year round and numerous blackouts occurring to prevent more of them, they're moving to build microgrids in towns. And so you build up a more resilient system that, again, is more resilient overall, but also is more resilient to the changes in the climate we're experiencing. So, there are all sorts of advantages of making this transition as quickly as possible and as smoothly as possible over trying to protect the nuclear industry, which is basically a huge financial failure at this point.
Well, to your point about keeping workers in the control room, the industry admits they do have backup plans to keep workers on their sites 24/7. They would provide them with cots and prepackaged food. Well, now that America has over 1.5 million cases, over 100,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths, probably more, has that emergency plan been implemented anywhere?
I'm not sure. I assume so. The reporting, the transparency hasn't been great on exactly what's going on at these plants.
I'm not surprised that you're not sure, because I couldn't find out either, and that's because they have actually announced that they're not going to say. So it's a secret operation. I guess it'll leak out eventually that a whole bunch of workers didn't come home and they're not coming home because they're stuck there at the plant for who knows how long, working what hours. And on another front, there are American-designed nuclear reactors all over the world. Four General Electric Mark I reactors blew up at Fukushima, Japan, following their tsunami in 2011. But now most Americans were flown home during the pandemic, and I wonder if this disease raises worries about other U.S.-type reactors in other countries.
Well, I guess it would depend on the country's capabilities, how many trained people they have, and to the extent that they're still healthy, can they work? If push comes to shove, you can always power it down and just maintain cooling systems and things like that to, keep the plant safe until you're going to ramp it back up. So, this push to constantly run these things, they tend to forget the alternative of, let's power it down. So we're going to play it safe. And when this thing's over, we'll get our people back and have enough personnel to run them safely.
Well, that's what we've had to do personally, stay home and be safe for a while until we can get a vaccine or it blows over. But the nuclear industry has not been willing to do that in America so far. And it brings me to wonder that if, God forbid, America experiences a second or third wave of this disease, worse than the first one, as happened in 1918, and the pandemic drags on for months or even a couple of years, Can this nuclear power industry hold out? Can they just keep training replacements for their sick and dying workers?
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Can this nuclear power industry hold out? Can they just keep training replacements for their sick and dying workers?
Well, I think that's a good question. And I would say it's foolish to sustain this industry when we have these other alternatives that are more affordable, cost-effective, benign, essentially, and create a lot more jobs. So at this point, this is political decision-making. It has nothing to do with the need for the plants. It has nothing to do with nuclear power being critical to addressing climate change, because it isn't. We need to get over this hump in this constant industry spin and regulators looking the other way. I mean, it's not going to be easy, to change that perspective. I think more people are skeptical of nuclear power now since Fukushima. But it'll take a little bit to convince people that, hey, we can do this, and we can do it better, we can address climate change much more efficiently, and we can create a lot more jobs for everyone that are actually living wage jobs. So we have to move in that direction. I think Congress, there are people in Congress, obviously, here, the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party that thinks in those terms. When you look at Joe Biden, he is embracing some of the Green Deal components now, for instance, New Green Deal. And hopefully, keep our fingers crossed, we'll see some positive change and start moving towards a more rational energy policy and approach to furnishing people with electric power.
So as we finish up here, please tell us about the Environmental Working Group and how we can use your news to keep track of the energy scene.
It's EWG.org. You just go to Next Level Energy on the website. It's easy to find. And we have blogs and reports posted there on any number of issues. EWG has offices in California, Washington, D.C., and Minneapolis. It works on a number of consumer issues, very focused on public health with respect to consumer products, for instance, farm runoff from fertilizer usage, focus also on confined feeding operation impacts from a public health and environmental standpoint. We work on energy as well. So it's a broad issue base for the organization, and we can always use folks' help. So please go to the website and read some things. My email is on there. You can find that. And if you have any questions or anything, fire them to me.
We've been speaking with Grant Smith, Senior Energy Policy Advisor for EWG, the Environmental Working Group. And you can find links to follow up on the things we've been talking about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Grant, thank you for shining some light in these dark corners. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for your interest.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Grant Smith mentioned the climate threat to nuclear installations. We have a case of that right now. The American Midwest has experienced record-setting extreme rainfall events. The city of Chicago just had its wettest May for the third year in a row. All that rain burst two dams in Michigan, as you heard. It flooded out the city of Midland, population 42,000. It also engulfed the Dow Chemical plant that has produced noxious chemicals for years, including Agent Orange. The company acknowledges their chemicals have leaked out over the years. It has been declared a Superfund site, among the worst in the country, requiring federal cleanup funds. There are chemicals lining the river, now being stirred up by the flood and washing down into Lake Michigan. What is less reported is the Dow nuclear reactor at that flooded site. It is a smaller research reactor built in the 1960s called a Triga 1 model. The reactor is sunk down in the ground. It doesn't have cooling rods, but depends on convection for water cooling. Although the reactor was not operating at the time of the flood in late May, The design suggests it probably still had nuclear materials inside. Are they now leaking out into the river and Lake Michigan? So far, the company says no. With no federal oversight reporting we can rely on, you just have to take the word of Dow Chemical that this reactor is perfectly safe during this extreme rainfall event. Nothing to worry about here. Beyond nearly 400 very large nuclear power plants in the United States, there are thousands of smaller reactors scattered around the country. They are at universities, military bases, and private companies. Who is keeping track of those as climate change and a pandemic come knocking at the door?
In Moscow, the talk is about freeing up the country's vast oil and gas reserves for profitable export by using nuclear power to meet domestic needs. Russia plans to double its atomic energy capability, even as experts say safety standards have improved little since the Chernobyl disaster.
Everyone in the West has dug his head into the sand like ostriches.
So let's talk about the awful virus out of control in Russia, the last bastion of nuclear ambition with an infamous track record. I have to report it because it seems no one from there feels safe to talk about it. One environment group reported safety questions about secret nuclear cities, but only after a government minister mentioned it. They declined an interview. I contacted reporters usually willing to do radio, including two from the English-language Moscow Times, but got no reply. Radio silence, as they say. These are dangerous times in Moscow, as ambulances line up outside hospitals, mortuaries go into overdrive, and the Putin government, like many governments, covers up early mistakes. So I will patch together what little we can find out. The Russian nuclear story, as I said in the beginning, spreads out to governments all over the world, from the Middle East to North Korea. Really, their nuclear technology is not much more dangerous than in Japan or America. It is all dangerous when built and run by flawed human beings. Every nuclear country has a secret history of near misses and hidden atomic poisons. Britain, Canada, France, you name it. There is a long list of atomic leaks, breakdowns, hair-raising risks all over the world. Like the Trump administration, the Putin government downplayed the threat of COVID-19 for precious months after it broke out in China. For a while in February, it looked like the pandemic would barely graze Russia. It was business as usual there. Then the first wave arrived. Now Russia has the second most serious infection in the world, with way over 300,000 cases confirmed, and who knows how many really. The government is reporting low death rates, under 4,000 mortalities. As in China, these numbers are not credible. The real number of deaths has to be many times that. In late May, the Moscow Times ran an article explaining why the Russian government did not count 60% of suspected COVID-19 deaths. Only cases where autopsies showed the disease were accepted. But who has the time or staff to do thousands of autopsies during a wave of the pandemic? The Moscow Health Department attributed the obvious spike in deaths to things like heart failure, stage 4 malignant diseases, leukemia, and other incurably deadly diseases. In many ways, Russia is still a secret state. Certainly, it has secret atomic cities. These are closed cities. You need special permits to go there even before the pandemic. In fact, since the 1950s. Nuclear bombs, missiles, and nuclear torpedoes are made there. Factories make reactors that can float in the sea, hide in the ground, or blast out into space. During Soviet times, these cities also specialized in chemical and biological weapons. Some say they still do, though the Russians publicly denounced those weapons programs years ago. So it was surprising when, quote, the head of Russia's state nuclear corporation has expressed concerns about the spread of the novel coronavirus to three of its so-called nuclear cities. That was at the beginning of May when Charles Diggs from the Russian environment group Bellona wrote about it. After the public announcement by Rosatom chief Alexei Likachev, Likachev said, The situation in Sarov, Elektrostal, Desnosgorsk is today particularly alarming. End quote. People in the West do not understand why it is alarming that anything was admitted at all. When he said it, Russia was just the seventh most infected country. Less than a month later, their cases have doubled, and Russia is number two worst in the world for coronavirus infections. The long archipelago of nuclear labs and businesses controlled by Russia's Rosatom employ around 250,000 people. The company admits they have stashed some workers permanently on nuclear sites, but like the U.S. industry, they won't say how many or where. That is what you do when you have an emergency. During the pandemic, they need to try to isolate enough workers to keep nuclear reactors operating and cooled down, to keep vast lakes and mountains of nuclear waste cool and secure, literally, to keep the lights on. The record shows safety at many Russian nuclear complexes has been poor at the best of times. There is a long and painful history, not just of nuclear accidents, those are legendary, but of atomic neglect. Barrels of highly radioactive materials were just sunk all over Russia's soil or dropped into the sea. Nobody is totally sure where it all went. The Soviet Union left the world a legacy of abandoned hotspots and no-go zones. Putin inherited that and doubled down on Russian nuclear ambitions. The Russians will sell, have sold, nuclear technology to anyone. Iran? Sure. North Korea? Well, that transfer of Russian nuclear technology may or may not have been authorized. Now they are building a nuclear reactor in Bangladesh. But why not? Canada gave India nuclear tech that led to their atomic bomb and trained the Pakistani father of the bomb. Canadian engineers watched as prison slave labor built a CANDU nuclear plant in Romania. Fortunately, it wasn't finished. The Romanians couldn't really pay, so Canada agreed to take it out in coal and jam. It's a dirty, corrupt business, no matter who does it. The on-again, off-again felon Mike Flynn was busy trying to sell nuclear reactors to dictators in the Middle East when he was arrested. China wants to make money selling nuclear reactors. Nobody makes money selling nuclear reactors. Nuclear power is the biggest money pit in the history of money pits, and the cost never ends. Deconstruction usually falls on future taxpayers. The dangerous radioactive waste needs to be secured and guarded for tens of thousands of years. It's never over. Thank goodness nuclear weapons are no longer a threat. Except both Russia and the United States have announced new supersonic atomic delivery missiles in just the last couple of years. Trump wants to cancel the Open Skies Agreement, which at least let the different states see what the other ones were doing with their nuclear stuff. Trump is pushing to build new nuclear weapons, the best anybody has ever seen. Britain is always embarking on a new nuclear plan that sinks into hundreds of billions of dollars of wasted pounds. Don't get me started on nuclear waste dump schemes that were never built and mini-reactors to save the climate. But the Russians have to be champions of nuclear secrecy. I don't know of any other whole cities entirely closed off, so secret they did not even appear on official maps. Now they say that despite official worries, everything nuclear is under control during the pandemic. The Rosatom chief reported 47 employees infected with COVID-19. 23 of them are in the secret city of Sarov, he said, in late April. How many are there now? This is Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. Get all our previous programs at our website, ecoshock.org. 1,100 miles east of Moscow, the Russian nuclear power plant at Belyarsk was the first to keep its staff on site. Nobody goes home. That was reported in Russian only by the state news agency Interfax. At least one staff member was sick for days with a high fever. That was in April. The old reactors from the 1960s at the site are temporarily shut down, but now they run two large fast neutron reactors there. The Russian group Bellona reports, quote, 270 workers isolated at the Rostov nuclear plant took to social media to complain they were being treated like cattle, end quote. That is in the southwest corner of Russia along the Don River. The workers reported lack of protection against the virus and terrible working conditions. Rosatom says those concerns have since been addressed. Rosatom also reports the large Russian uranium mining industry has been shut down due to coronavirus concerns. Many mines of all kinds have been closed around the world. We may start to feel the shortages sometime in the fall, even though demand has fallen off. The Russians are also concerned about their electric utilities because, as they say, quote, falling incomes of both retail and corporate consumers might result in a tidal wave of unpaid electricity bills, end quote. Not much of a shock in Russia, I suppose. And the same thing will happen in the States. The American and European electric utilities fear the same thing. Uranium mining has been closed down for the pandemic pretty well everywhere, from Canada to Kazakhstan to Namibia. Nuclear reprocessing plants are also closed. There is currently a glut of nuclear fuel, but I suppose if the pandemic is not solved in a year or so, nuclear power plants could run low on fuel. Perhaps experts can advise us on that. On April 14th, the Russian language news outlet reported three employees of Kursk nuclear power plant were infected by COVID-19. That is in the city of Kurchatov, in the direction of the border with Ukraine. You need a special permit to go there, too. How many are infected there now? The Russian nuclear industry, both weapons and power, is just not immune to this novel virus. So far, they have not been overwhelmed by it, not that we know of. Now that the pandemic is full-blown and still growing in Russia, there is practically nothing coming out about the nuclear danger there. I suppose we will find out 30 years from now when the archives are released, or maybe any day now when radioactivity monitors in Sweden or Washington State go off. Of course, that could be coming from Japan, China, Canada, the U.S., or any of the dozens of nuclear operations run by humans with no immunity to a new disease and economies shaking down. This is Radio EcoShock. In last week's Radio EcoShock program, two top scientists told us about the coming heat as we load up the atmosphere with carbon. Dr. Radley Horton from Columbia was part of a team that discovered heat beyond human endurance is already popping up in various countries. It's not that hot in Siberia. I'm sure the locals are enjoying the early summer warmth, although they must be nervous. Forest fires, and they have massive planet-changing forest fires, are already burning in Siberia when it should be time for the snow to melt. Dr. Genevieve Gunther tweets, "The heat wave in Siberia is horror movie stuff. Imagine thinking you're going out into a bitterly cold 10 degrees Fahrenheit day, but opening your door only to discover it's nearly 80 degrees out. That's what's happening right now. In reality, we are in a climate emergency." End quote. For European and Canadian listeners, that's 31 degrees C in Siberia instead of minus 12 degrees C expected, over a massive, massive area. It's a big heat dome. Will we see a repeat of the 2010 heat wave over Russia that killed tens of thousands of people and closed down the country's wheat export trade? How much carbon will be released this year from forest fires in the far north? It has begun. Some people ask me, "Alex, what is your fixation with this nuclear power thing?" As kids, we were taught to duck under a school desk in case our city was evaporated by a Soviet nuclear bomb. That was a real fear for a whole generation. Later, as a reporter in a uranium mining town, I wrote obituaries for miners who died too young. Our rural retreat was downwind from the Pickering nuclear reactors, which then broke down with cracked tubes. I got away from all that in Vancouver, no nuclear power in British Columbia, until a professor at Simon Fraser University, which is literally just up the hill from my home, found radioactive particles blowing in from Fukushima, Japan. Radio EcoShock covered the multi-reactor meltdowns in Fukushima with emergency podcasts from day one, the day it happened. Some listeners may not realize how close Japan came to becoming two isolated pods of partly inhabitable islands. That country was saved by favorable wind, just the wind blowing about 85% of the radioactivity out to the Pacific Ocean. And there it hit the American aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan and 15 support ships. Those sailors, some of them dying from cancer, are still using the courts trying to get compensation. For being irradiated on the job, the ships were still contaminated years later. Had the wind blown inland, the center of Japan might still be evacuated for generations. Tokyo, as it was heavily polluted with radioactivity, both directly and then following when rains washed radioactive particles into the wet ground below the city and out into Tokyo Bay. The whole world is fortunate the novel coronavirus postponed the International Olympic Games in Japan. The Japanese were insisting on using playing fields right in the ground city zero of Fukushima City. There are still measurable radioactive hotspots there. Athletes and fans would be exposed, although their cancers might not show up, until a couple of decades later. It was madness of the IOC to agree to sports events in Fukushima, Japan. No doubt the Japanese will try again, if this pandemic ever ends. Nuclear insanity never sleeps. Several large Japanese reactors never reopened following the damage from the 2011 tsunami. The doomed nuclear reprocessing plant was still closed, last I heard. But other nuke plants have reopened in Japan, despite widespread public opposition and protests. The nuclear myth is so hard to kill. Now, running reactors in Japan face yet another threat as staff become infected with COVID-19. They should shut down to protect the public, but I predict they will not. Humans appear incapable of adapting when new threats to the existing power order strike them. But the giant risks when a pandemic infects the nuclear chain goes far beyond the United States, Russia, or Japan. For our world listeners, let's run through a few quickly with the help of a report from INRAG, the International Nuclear Risk Assessment Group. On April 24th, these experts put out a working paper called Nuclear Safety and Security During a Pandemic. They use careful language, always quoting what authorities say, and then gently pointing out questions that should raise the hair on the back of your neck. For example, this on Canada, quote, planned upgrade work on the Ontario Power Generation Darlington Nuclear Generating Station's Unit 3 has been postponed. Work to enhance the safety of the plant in the context of the station's plant life extension was scheduled to start in May 2020, but it is now postponed to a later date to help ensure stable electricity supplies during the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the World Nuclear Association, an industry group. Since the plant remains online, the question of continued safe operation remains potentially unresolved, end quote from INRAG. And I say, yikes. Finland had to delay nuclear power loading into their new unit at Olkiluoto because of the pandemic. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Have they had infections in workers at other units now powered up in Finland? Here's more European pandemic news directly from Europe, posted at the end of April by INRAG, and I quote, the pandemic has had major impacts on France's nuclear workforce. It is reported that of 22,500 employees of EDF's nuclear production department, 15,000 are on telework. On March 20, 2020, it was reported that EDF had, quote, declined to comment about the level of absenteeism or the number of confirmed coronavirus infections among its staff, end quote, but had said that, quote, its nuclear plants could operate for 3 months with a 25% reduction in staffing levels and for 2 to 3 weeks with a 40% fewer staff, end quote from EDF. Continuing with INRAG's assessment, quote, coming to specific locations, work at the Flamanville site in France, where two reactors are in operation and one is under construction, has been impeded. EDF reduced its staff level from 800 to 100 on the site. Only people in charge of safety and security remain on site. The two operating reactors at the site have been in outage since January 2019 and September 2019, respectively, with major maintenance, repair, and upgrade work reduced. Major outages for nuclear power plants in Germany were planned for April and May. The German regulatory authority has forbidden the maintenance and refueling outage of the nuclear power plant at Grunde as originally planned. The shutdown and related activities would have necessitated about 1,500 staff for a period of 2 weeks at the plant site. Transports of highly radioactive waste from the Sellafield reprocessing plant in the UK, planned for the spring of this year, have been postponed as the required corresponding police operation was not feasible. That was all a quote from the International Nuclear Risk Assessment Group. It sounds to me like European nuclear operators are struggling to cope with this massive pandemic, but they still keep reactors going no matter the risk, even when electricity demand has plummeted. Sweden has idled two reactors at the Vattenfall Ringhals plant, not directly because of the infection, but due to electricity prices going below the cost of production at nuclear plants. As you heard from Rosatom, nuclear construction projects employing thousands of workers are still going ahead in Egypt and Turkey. Neither country is currently operating a loaded reactor, so the big worry is this: will the building be done flawlessly under such pressure while the disease is roaming about? The same question looms for Bangladesh, of course. What about China, where nuclear reactors bloom like new flowers? The government-run authority says there is absolutely no problem with this pandemic thing. Bloomberg News reports, quote, "The coronavirus caused reduced output at CGN Power Company's atomic plants after the Lunar New Year holiday," end quote. Output from nuclear power in China dropped 4.7% in the first quarter from the year before, according to the company. That is shocking in a country that was always expanding demand exponentially. China is one of the last places in the world on a nuclear construction binge. They have 13 to 15 reactor sites rising up all over the country. All that is going full speed ahead, according to the government, with countless thousands of workers, pandemic or no pandemic. As Reuters reports in late April, the Chinese Ministry of Ecology and Environment says not a single existing nuclear power plant has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic. I guess those workers have a magic pill the rest of the world can't find. As this persistent virus flares back up in China lately, with another lockdown of about 100 million people, it is a news desert for nuclear operations. There is no credible news and no transparency from the Chinese nuclear system. That is not a good thing. Meanwhile, a strong storm is coming. While the pandemic keeps killing people and jobs, climate change is not sleeping. You know all those nuclear reactors clustered along the coastlines in so many countries? New science released at the end of May shows hurricanes really are getting stronger. Stronger than they were in the 1970s, even, when those reactors were designed. I hope to get one of the authors of that paper on this program. As well, the U.S. National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration has also issued a warning for a busy hurricane season in 2020. They predict 3 to 6 very dangerous hurricanes. The oceans have heated up our emissions, and that powers hurricanes stronger than when America's old reactors were built. Scientists and the government are warning more superstorms could batter the coast and nuclear reactors. In 1992, Hurricane Andrew passed directly over the Turkey Point nuclear station owned by Florida Power and Light. In 2018, Hurricane Florence grazed Duke Energy's reactors at Brunswick in North Carolina. It's only a matter of time. The bottom line in all countries: big corporations and governments should shut down all nuclear power plants at least until we are safe from this highly infectious and deadly disease. They could, but they don't. We are addicted to dangerous power, and we don't know how to stop. And that is the truth, including oil, gas, and coal. That is the truth about this civilization speeding toward collapse. An extra thank you this week for listening all the way through. nuclear news is always like going to the dentist. Nobody looks forward to it, but it's worse if we don't go. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for caring about reality.